Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
What is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And of course, as always, sitting next to me, whom the man that we've been giggling and laughing like children the last 5 minutes, Kyle. Filio Philson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
His wife has sent us something funny, and he had a good question. He brought up, we were talking about, I'm sure everybody listening has seen the Stevie Nicks His name's Dogface, the TikTok thing where he's riding his skateboard.
I know what drinking you're talking all that, about.
And the Stevie Nicks deal. But to answer your question, I think that's what kicked it all off, because Kyle had a great question. He's like, where did all this Stevie Nicks love just all of a sudden show up from?
I thought for like maybe she had died, because like instantly on the radio, they're like almost all the channels are playing Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks songs. I'm like, I'm a big fan. What the heck's the deal? So I had to look, and no, she's not dead.
Make sure she wasn't dead.
It's just odd that just something... like just a little Twitter or whatever, that TikTok, I guess, is what it was on. I don't know. I don't keep up with that stuff. Yeah. But whatever it was on, just a little clip of a guy listening to her sing is now like a resurgence in her career.
And he's lip syncing. Don't forget he's lip syncing.
Yeah, drinking cranberry juice or something. Word. Up in Idaho on a skateboard or something.
That's where it
took place. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, he lives somewhere in Idaho, some small town.
Yeah, that's it. That's the Stevie. Dude, what about us? We've been losing everybody the last couple weeks.
I know. It's been rough.
Folks, I've been in class. So that's the reason we've been kind of radio silent, is I've had a lot of continuing education hours and had no time to do anything besides work and school. And now that's over with. Now it's going to be wheels off again. But while we were in lockdown with that crap, you and I have been talking about, so we lost Jerry Jeff Walker. Then we lost Billy Joe Shaver. Then we lost Sean Connery. Then Alex Trebek. I'm like, dude, when is this? Can we stop now?
I know. Terrible time, but I mean, and I start worrying about other famous people that are pretty old. Like I constantly worry about Willie Nelson passing.
Oh, it was bad enough with Jerry Jeff or with Billy Joe. And I've seen Billy Joe Shaver almost a half a dozen times, I believe.
I mean, how many times, and we were like warming up to do the show in the studio before we start recording or videoing, how many times in the background do we have like Katie by Jerry Jeff
Navajo
Walker
Rug
playing? Yeah, I mean.
Navajo Rug. There you go.
We see that all the time and laugh and giggle. I know.
That's true.
It's the passing of time. But
I don't like it. Yeah, I'm not a fan. So, yeah, not at all.
I have a really close friend of mine whose brother is pretty smart, and he was actually on Jeopardy 3 times.
Oh, yes. I remember this.
He won like a couple $100,000, enough to where he could pay for his house and everything. Yeah. Anyways, he met Alex, of course, every time he was on that show, and he talked about how nice of a guy he was. Like, I mean, like when the cameras weren't on, like he truly was just a nice, kind soul.
Yeah, hanging out and just BSing with him.
Right. So, you know, man.
It's a normal dude.
I know. And Sean Connery, you know, a great actor. I used to be a huge fan. Well, I was a huge fan of James Bond. He was my favorite Bond. But, you know, there was a couple of years ago where people were digging into his past. One of those old interviews with Barbara Walters where he's talking about hitting women and stuff.
Well, he used to knock the hell out of him in James Bond.
I'm saying, yeah, but I'm talking about in real life. I'm surprised.
Don't you besmirch him. I will smack you.
More people didn't try to attack his credentials, but yeah.
But he'd been sick for a while, dealing with dementia and all. But hell, he was 90.
That's another thing.
Shit, I hope I make it till I'm 90.
You don't realize it, because I don't think he's been in a movie in quite a while, has he?
I don't believe so.
So you kind of like, you just don't think about it in your everyday life. That holy crap, that guy's like 15 years older than when I saw him in that.
Betty White's still rocking. You can't kill her.
Really?
Yeah, she's still kicking ass.
It's like the human cockroach.
Yeah.
Like, but my father.
I'm with you with the whole thing with Willie. So, yeah. Folks, hope y'all have had a great little time right now. I hope everything, look, we're not political here, but I hope everybody that's had any skin in the game, I hope everybody's okay. We're all friends.
Hope everybody had a good Halloween.
Yeah, I hope everybody got a bunch of candy. If you're a diabetic, I hope you didn't get any candy, but a lot of fist pumps maybe and bottles of water. Like,
There's
a lot of sugar-free candy. My wife has diabetes, and so I get to try a lot of that crazy stuff. But y'all have all seen pictures of me. Do I look like I'm down with sugar-free? Like, I don't eat anything. Look, this is how I look at it. I don't know about you. I don't eat anything sugar-free. I either don't eat it or I eat it with sugar. That's I don't play in between games on any of that.
I'm the same way. Like, I don't drink diet soda. No. I will go three or four days without a soda, but when I drink one, it's going to be a regular soda.
I don't drink light beer.
I do that sometimes.
No.
I do that sometimes. But I prefer, like IPAs. You're talking about, I prefer like a Guinness or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. Yeah. Absolutely. But speaking of preferring, when I'm scouring the internet looking for crazy sightings to do in our news segment, I'm telling you, the titles of some of these sightings is what really draws me in. And when I came across this one, there's absolutely no way I cannot tell this story. Check this out. This is from our buddy Lon. It's called Huge White Bioluminescent Flying Man Bat Observed in Guyana, South America. Right? Like, when you read the title, you're like, is that the show? Is that the story you're going with? I'm like, how can I not read it? I mean, that is like one of the coolest titles of all time.
I told you that needs to be the name of your new band.
Right? Huge White Bioluminescent Flying Man Bat. Anyways, according to this story was sent in to Lon. And, of course, he told me to check it out. But it says a man in Guyana. Isn't that where, what was that, the Jim Jones massive suicide? Wasn't that in Guyana?
I think so.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
with the Kool-Aid
so.
Or whatever? Yeah, I think that's exactly where this happened. But anyways, this says, I live on the east coast of Guyana, South America. In a village that is very quiet and a nice peaceful place to live. Last night, which was October 20th, 2020,
woohoo,
while having some beers on my veranda, a close friend and I were just talking when I noticed a huge bat that was illuminated with bioluminescent and gave off a pale white glow. Now, at first, I thought it was a freakishly large chicken hawk. That thought didn't last for more than a nanosecond when I realized it was muscular, particularly ripped, like some steroid junkie from its neck to its toes. Its fur was thicker in the lines that circled its chest, and the chest muscles created near the light its huge flapping wings. It was larger than anything I've ever seen in the air. That's not an airplane, like a mini Cessna. It flew beyond the line of houses on the street, towards an empty, small block that's a ball field for sports, which is usually used for cricket. Its glow was something else. Its fur and even its wings were glowing, though less so for the tips of the wings. At first, I thought it was my neighbor's LED lights. They were making it look so freakishly illuminated with that unsettling glow, but it went past the light's threshold into the darker area, all while looking like some kind of giant firefly on overdrive. The closest image I can think of is the man bat from the movie Batman, but it was white and glowing. The wingtips were elongated, like they had talons, and looked a bit darker, like they didn't have any fur. However, the stretched skin between the tips was a pale pink. It literally disappeared after reaching a darker patch, as if its glow could be turned on and off at will. There were no trace of it, even after the darker patches, which were illuminated by lights from the houses surrounding the ballpark. Even its massive size didn't make a sound. The place was quiet as hell, too, and it was close, but its wings barely seemed to disturb the air or make any noticeable movement sounds. I only saw it flap its wings once, like it could glide with extreme ease, since it crossed the street to the other side of the block before my friend could properly react. He still got a glimpse of it, though, and was just as unnerved. Its face cam was bat-like entirely, even with that definable curved raised snout most bats seem to have, and those large ears. Around my area, we do have fruit bats, but they're all regularly sized. I'd estimate it to be larger than a harpy eagle, and there's absolutely no possibility of one of those things being out on the coast when they all prefer the mountains and hinterlands and are more to the middle or center of the country. I have seen those majestic birds a lot, too. Even became friends with an extremely intelligent one while I volunteered at the local zoo as a kid with my sister. There's no possibility of me mistaking what I saw for one of those. Everything about what I saw was bat-like, but huge, with longer, more muscular legs, and beyond anything I have seen in nature. The legs also did not look like small bat legs, tapered to its wings and stretched out longer, but seemed to bend at the point where a knee would be, kind of like with a human knee, with defined calves and rounded toes. After seeing it, I realized that many nights while gaming after 12 a.m., I've noticed a silver flash through my windows that I thought was some sort of weird trick of the moonlight. But now, I recognize that unmistakable pale glow like an anglerfish or bioluminescent sails. Last bit, I was only one beer in, so no, I was not drunk. Hallucinating something that real, with that unmistakable details and movements of a live creature in flight is impossible. For a 4.5% alcohol beer, it simply doesn't do that. SW. Odd sighting. And once again, this comes with a lot of those things that we see strange moving in the sky. Is I don't believe it's a real physical thing, like it's an apparition of something. Once again, how many times have we talked about something large flying through the air, but it's not even really moving its wings? He said he saw the thing flap its wings once. So I don't know if all these sightings are, they're able to glide really easy, but I can remember distinctly a strange looking like flying lion that was seen in somewhere in the UK. And the same kind of thing. They saw it move over these buildings, but it never flapped its wings. It was just completely static.
Mm-hmm.
So what the heck? What could it be? I mean, there can't be a bat that's man-sized, ripped with steroids.
I had to look up man bat in the Batman series. Like I'm not a Batman fan.
Yeah, I'm not either.
So I had to look it up. And it looks like the Jeepers Creepers kind of.
Right.
Looks, so you see that it goes hand in hand with the flying humanoid encounters.
And why does it seem like there's a lot more flying humanoid encounters in Mexico and South America, like much more so than here in North America?
That is odd. I don't know why that is, but yeah, it does seem like we have a lot more in South America.
Mexico is part of North America, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
South of the U.S., it seems like there's a lot more of it than here or other parts of the world. I don't know, but you know, Guyana, I'm thinking of like a Island of Dr. Moreau setting. Like this was something that was the Nazis escaped not only to Argentina, but perhaps Guyana. And there's some kind of crazy lab. Like what was that movie? Overlord. And
they're
manipulating with CRISPR, these bats.
Yes.
And they somehow created a bioluminescent giant Batman thing. And it got loose. That'd make a really good movie, right?
It would. It would make a great movie. I forgot all about the Island of Dr. Moreau.
That's a good movie.
Do you like the one with Val Kilmer or the earlier one? Man, I forgot the dude's name that was in it. Oh, the from like the 70s.
Marlon Brando?
No, he's in the Val Kilmer. There's another one. It was before that.
I never saw that one.
Yeah, it's just as creepy. Of course, it's just a little bit different, you know, creatures, but yet still just as wacky.
Yeah, that was back when Val Kilmer still looked like Top Gun Val Kilmer, right?
Yeah, because he kind of went through a phase.
Where
he looked like me, and then
it was very odd. I remember he had a guest role in a movie recently. I'm trying to think of what it was. Maybe it was The Snowman or something. And like while we were watching it, me and my wife was like, "What is wrong with his speech?" And they later said, I later found out that they were like dubbing over his speech. Like I don't know the details, but something is certainly wrong.
Something's clearly off.
Yeah, I don't know if he's had a couple strokes.
Yeah.
Or if he has some like dependency issues with, you know, some kind of narcotics. I don't know, but something is wrong.
What you're saying is you're not a doctor, but you can definitely see there's an issue.
There's definitely a difference between Val Kilmer in like Willow? Top Gun, Willow, Tombstone, than when you start seeing him in these
Thunderheart.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I love that movie.
I haven't seen that, man. A long time.
Yeah, that's an old school. That's when he's real babe. That's when he's Iceman Val Kilmer is when he's in that one.
I'm trying to remember the plot of that movie. Anyways, moving on. What do you got there?
It kind of goes back in the whole thing with Thunderheart. Now that you bring it up, I'm going to be talking about a story real quick that, again, I stole from Lon about, like you said, it's always the headline. Where you look at all this stuff and you read, then you're like, dude, what is this? And, of course, he shares. I love to help Lon out. And that's what I tell everybody. You feel like donating some money sometime, hook line up at Phantoms and Monsters. That guy, first of all, it's great to help him, but it's also a whole nother thing is, dude, this is a free encyclopedia everybody has. Well, a place to post, a place to read.
I was going to say, and now that Albert Rosales retired from keeping his Flying Humanoid website, you know, Lon really is the last place to have such a huge cachet of strange sightings.
If something happens, it's going to be up to us.
Every time,
the reins.
Every time somebody sends in a story to us that's pretty interesting, I always forward it to Lon.
Yeah.
And Lon, every time he gets something interesting, because he knows like stuff about the Glimmer Man, especially, he'll shoot that stuff our way. Along with Derek from Monsters Among Us.
Yeah. This is something, though. The headline alone is wild. This is what it says. Sasquatch abducts and kills Native man in the 1970s.
Kills him. I mean, I'm familiar with Sasquatch abduction. We're all familiar with the Albert Ottsman story and stuff. But, and then there's the people that talk about the missing 411, the missing people, missing hunters. Some people blame that on Sasquatch. So perhaps those are abductions. Phil, what's going on with this case?
This is what it says. It says this story is passed down through relatives that did not openly talk about it much due to the way these Native Americans revered Sasquatch and felt guilty about killing one. They especially felt guilty because this Sasquatch was believed to be more human than the average Sasquatch. The Salish Indian who recounts this story makes this comment about this particular wild man, a Skanicum. And in a word for someone born not of direct human, but of Sasquatch kind.
Is a what?
Skanicum.
I'm going to have to remember that.
And it says, this might seem like a cruel joke, something to call a human with developmental disabilities, etc. But to be honest to God, truth may be too hard to swallow. That Sasquatch have interbred with women in the past and the existence of these offspring have been swept under the rug and kept hidden like the hairy man. During the 60s, it was rumored that one of the town bishops of the local church, like a Jesuit, had taken in a freak of some sort, and this, quote, freak was not human, but not animal enough to be rejected by the Jesuit. So, he was keeping him in the basement and feeding him. The only reason knowledge of this exists is because people would hear things at the church, inhuman things. If you ask me, the Jesuits did not want this thing to be out and about. This sounds somewhat unbelievable, but keep in mind that the reason the men who shot the hairy man went a little insane was because they killed a human. A giant, ridiculous, muscular human covered in hair, but a human. Too human to parade about town in the back of a pickup truck, if you know what I mean. The Sasquatch, or Skanicum, of this story had become particularly bold about raiding the homes when people were away and stealing their food. The account starts when the wild man was having his way, free reign. He was getting bold. He started to break into houses during the middle of the day. Children would see him and flip out. Police were called. Meetings were held. The town was becoming more and more shaken up by the presence of this unknown intruder. This is when something incredible happened to the particular family who was favored by the hairy man. They had become so lax and accepting of the hairy man's presence that one night, while standing on the porch, the father was yanked off by his feet in full view of the entire family. They screamed and huddled together and cried while whatever it was fought the dad on the porch. The sounds of fighting and screaming and knowing that your father was powerless against whatever it was, it must have been unspeakably traumatic for the children. They're now grown, like myself, and I wonder to this day how much this has affected their lives. The father was gone for days. Whatever it was that had taken him had carried him off into the night after the struggle on the porch. There was blood on the grass, and the family grabbed neighbors and men of the community to help recover the father. The men got together and followed the signs of trails left by whatever it was. Drops of blood and signs of something large passing through. They followed this trail all the way to the very creek which my uncle had spotted at Sasquatch at. They followed the creek all night, and when the men returned the next day, they didn't speak a word. A whole group of grown men, and not one of them was willing to speak about what had happened. They had, however, found the father. They recovered him. He was beaten black and blue all over his entire body. Ribs broken, arms and legs broken. The father was in shock, incoherent, and could not speak a word. One of my uncles had gone to see the man and his family in the hospital. There was a fair amount of good and will being shown to the family, and that went through this experience. Nobody knew what happened, only that the father was close to death and that the family was very shaken up. So my uncle stopped to pay his respects and saw for himself the father lying in the hospital. His eyes were bulging wide. He was trembling constantly. The man had been beaten badly, but something else was wrong with him. He was traumatized. He died that night, and to this day, nobody knows what grabbed him or what happened to him. And to this day, the men who went on the recovery mission to save him have kept these stories to themselves. Only a select circle, including my father, remembers these incidents. Almost nobody talks about them, and I've shared them with you for whatever it's worth. Those men found what it was that took the father. They found the hairy man, and they killed it. They shot it to death with high-powered rifles, and then they buried the body. The men who did this feel incredibly guilty. Sasquatch, as a matter of fact, here, and the older generations told us to avoid them and leave them alone because that they are human beings. They're not animals, and they're not magic. They can most certainly be monsters, and this is one story that corroborates that. But the hairy man, or Bigfoot, is so human-like that even here, when a group of men killed one, they were so traumatized by the experience that they felt guilty of murder. Back in the 70s, there was no desire to be rich and famous for killing a Bigfoot. There was no desire to even talk about Bigfoot. These kind of things were dirty little secrets, especially on reservations. Yes, there were plenty of white kids bumping into Bigfoot and getting in the newspapers, but the native community is tight-lipped about this, and even still to this day. Thanks, Wyoming guy.
That's an incredible, crazy story.
It's wild, right? That it drugged the father off, the people were involved, and those involved still, you know, went to their graves, wouldn't speak about it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't talk anything about it, which is, I like the way they point out in that story, though, that they believe that it's a human, that it's a race of people,
right?
Just a different race of people, which is something that a lot of folks have speculated about. And we've even discussed it here.
Well, I've talked to, I mean, there's numerous sightings where somebody had the Sasquatch in their scope and simply decided not to shoot because it was too human-like.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
And I know that angers a lot of people. They're like, come on, man, I would do it. You say that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I know they have to, in order to be taken serious, you got to shoot one. But, man, I think it'd be tough to do.
You're going to be loved and hated, right? You're going to be loved by the people that want it proven, but you're going to be hated.
By everybody?
By everybody else, because you are, like, destroying something that's so rare.
Also, I feel like, and we discussed this not long ago, like you said, everybody wants it to be proven real, but nobody wants to be the person that kills it to prove it real. And so you have to look at it like, I don't want to be that person.
Well, look at the dentist that shot the lion.
Yeah.
Cecil,
yep.
The lion. Yep. I mean, he had purchased, or was it like a raffle or something? He had won the tag, paid a lot of money for it.
But I still think it was a little shady the way he might have done some stuff.
I know that. Yes. Yeah. No, I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying, but look at the flack he got.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you can imagine.
Or the fellow from Dallas that killed that rhino after he paid all the, yeah, exactly. So
what they don't realize is like the hundreds of thousands of dollars that's collected, it actually helps the rhinos, actually helps the lions.
That's true.
It's bizarre, but like, and it seems counterproductive or... That's not the word I'm looking for.
Counterintuitive to think that
hunters actually help preserve hunting, the species and the animals. But they do.
Yep.
Like the money that's collected from licenses, things like that, is why there's more deer in North America now than there was when Columbus first got here.
Yeah.
I mean, they're everywhere. Whitetail. Compared to when I was a kid. There seems like there's just way more.
Well, we've seen that grow just like we've seen pigs. Like we're covered up with pigs.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. I don't ever remember seeing them as a kid. Ever. Not here.
Oh, that did happen a couple of weeks ago or weekend before last. We went out to our where we like to do a little camping and a little hunting and a looking around. And Mr. Filson over here harvested a hog with his recurve.
Actually, it was yours.
It was fun. He didn't have it with him. I go, here's mine. And he had to go over there and shoot one of them pigs.
Yeah.
Smoker time. Folks, we're going to take a real quick break. When we come back on the other side of this, I'm going to get into the story of the Amber Room, and I think you're going to enjoy it because it's lost treasure. And who doesn't enjoy stories about lost treasure? So let's take a quick one and we'll jump back into this. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, here we go. And I cannot wait to chit chat about this because I've been wanting to talk about this for a hot minute. Philly, why is it? And I already know the answer because it's going to, I already know what you're going to say, but it's got to be Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark is what always comes to mind when you bring up any sort of Nazi artifact that's gone missing or something right. like that. It's what everybody thinks of. And I look, if you're an author or a storyteller, writer, screenplays, it doesn't matter what you're doing. That time of the 40s seems to be the time that you can write, just like you brought up Overlord, you can write just about anything you want because at that time, the whole world's in turmoil.
Yeah.
And so everything's crazy, not to mention the fact that being able to exchange information takes a little bit longer than it does now. Like the whole country can know about something in 15 minutes. You know, if you go on Twitter and all this stuff, you know, it's super fast. Back then, you know, you didn't quite have that. So it's real easy to have like some conspiracies. Like it feels like that was the time of conspiracies is when all that went
and
down.
When it comes to like when you're talking about that time, we look at it now and people mean like, man, it must have been horrible back then. They didn't have any internet. They didn't have any central heat and air.
Right.
They didn't have any smartphones. But and I wonder, was it not better then? I know that's me being romantic about
if you could keep everything that you've got right now, but the advanced technology, if you could keep everything but that, like all the medical, all the transportation, all that, but without what we have now, it's like it's gone. We've just went a little too far. That's what you're saying with technology.
I mean, not having,
because you can't have both. I know what you mean. It's like you want them to be able, because I'm thinking you want them to be able to use radios, you want them to be able to fly planes, to do all this stuff. But you can't do it without iPads, without phones.
Yeah,
you can't
have both.
Yeah, it's all or nothing. And that's what sucks.
I just wonder if it was just a better time then. First of all, there was less people around, which is plus for me.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I think it's a nostalgic feeling. I think the best time to live is at this very moment is the best time to live as far as health, as far as everything across the board is the best time. But you can see that we don't need to know as much about each other as we know.
I know. I think it's very harmful. And all types of things. I mean, like the young kids, I have two young boys. I have three young boys, but two that are teenagers. And I just see the implications of like social media does on them.
Yeah.
Like not only is it hard to, it's hard to even parent them because I didn't grow up with that. So like, I can't even really give them advice. They just, some girl at their school posted inappropriate pictures of herself and it caused a huge deal at the middle school. Like,
oh no,
80 kids are implemented and are indicted in this thing because, you know, they've been sending it to each other. you know, I asked the boys, the school sent out a voicemail warning all the parents about it. I mean, like, it's a big deal. The kid probably did it not knowing fully what she was doing.
It's true.
And that these are things like, I don't know how to explain. Anyways, though, well, it's just a different time now. And you're right. When it comes to the Nazis, for whatever reason, I guess because every comic book you read, everything, there's always good versus evil. And they're the epitome of evil. So you have Superman, then you have Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, whatever this mystery is.
Well, there's a reason the Nazis are the epitome of evil.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's why you like a good story. Like
they are. Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
There's a reason. But
that's why,
they are.
Like, when you think of a story, it's almost always, it's just cooler if Nazis were involved.
Well, you just.
Doesn't it seem that way?
Well, you just made my point with talking about the school. And the reason being is look how fast everyone has reacted to just that. You couldn't steal gold from a place and not everybody be looking for you. Everybody be like, oh, be on the lookout. Like, look how fast Amber Alerts go all across social media and all across. Now imagine that none of that happens. Like we said, now you're going back to the 40s, to 1944, 1942, 1945. Like, you're in all the turmoil. It would be real easy to sneak things around, especially during a war. And we know that. And this has been proven time and time again. So I need to ask you, we're going to get to the Amber Room. But there's a lot of other treasures that have been allegedly stolen and lost. Kyle, you know who Rommel is? Field Marshal Rommel.
Yes.
Irwin. About his treasure.
The Desert Fox, isn't that his nickname?
I believe one of many, yes. His treasure had never been discovered, and they believed it was hidden by Rommel. And they said that it was, when they say it was people that had heard all this, in the folklore of this, during World War II, it was said to have been hidden in an underwater cave. And of course, he is a Nazi general. And then so he was supposed to take this and, you know, use it for the whole Nazis. The story goes that he had given four SS divers six steel ammunition boxes, and in it was a bunch of German treasures. And the story goes that it was 4,400 pounds of gold, silver, artwork, jewelry. I mean, stones of no telling what they had in there, all of this, and that they were going to bury it under the sea. The story goes also that it was in one of the caves off of Corsica's eastern coast. Now, they believe that it could be worth over $20 million right now. So the Great Britain, of course, sends investigators. They start going in there with the German soldiers. They go through this whole thing. They have never found it. They've had these coordinates out. They've done all this stuff. They've never found any of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not even sure. Well, I read part of another story that says that Rommel really wasn't even involved in any of this, that his name got tied to it, but Rommel had nothing to do with his missing, with all this gold, that he wasn't even there. So they just tied it to Rommel. There's another one. If I ask you to tell me about the lost Raphael portrait, the Polish painter Raphael, and he had a painting called The Portrait of a Young Man. Not many people have ever even heard of this painting. I was one of not many. That's me, not many.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it.
So Raphael was a Polish painter, lived in between 1513 and 1514, right in there is when he painted it. So he, like in the late 1400s, right, is when he was born, when he was coming up. I didn't dig into that whole thing, but people have considered this painting alone to be the single most important painting to have ever been stolen during World War II. That's a big, bold statement to make. A huge, and of course, leave it again to the Nazis. The Polish prince, we're not even doing that, but his last three letters in his name is Ski, if y'all are wondering. Before that, something that's impossible. After that is Ski. It was stolen from the museum there, the Prince Satorski, I believe, museum in Poland. So in this museum, they had three paintings. They had Leonardo's painting of Lady with Ermine. They had Rembrandt's landscape with the Good Samaritan. And then they had the Portrait of the Young Man painted by Raphael. And of course, like we're talking about, Nazis show up. This is, I believe, in 39 when they get there. Here's a really interesting thing. They would go into little tool sheds or outbuildings around museums and big areas like that, and they would hang them and then build fake walls over them. So you would build a fake wall and then tuck this in the wall. So you would never know. So when you looked, you have to imagine it's not finished out. You could tear it out, Like tear the sheetrock off y'all's walls, hang it in between the studs, re-sheetrock it back up, and then just be like, oh, no, it looks like this all the time or what, and hoped it was never found, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what happens? It gets found. Took them a couple weeks, but a couple weeks later, they found it. They believe now, the people that have researched and gone into this believe that they were tipped off, that somebody had said something for favor. I mean, when you talk about men that are that ruthless, that are willing to kill your family, your children, anything like that, and they're like, where are your goods? I don't believe you. I've heard this is. Boom, you shoot one of your kids right in front of you, and they're like, you're going to tell me, or I'm going to shoot the other one. You're going to tell them anything.
I mean,
right?
It doesn't matter. As they swept over Europe, I mean, they plundered everything. Thousands of art pieces.
Everything.
Right?
Everything. To ship it back.
Yep.
Ship it back to Berlin. They were going hard in the paint. The same thing. So again, they find it, right? They find all of these paintings. They end up stealing them, taking them and all that. In August of 1944, Leonardo and Rembrandt, of course, those were moved. They were moved to another town. Some of these were actually, here's the problem. Some of these paintings were believed to actually been taken to Dresden. And then when the fire bombings hit that they, you know, they think yep. they've lost all of this. There was nothing written about Raphael's painting, though. They have, and you know, they were meticulous bookkeepers, the Germans were. They have the bookkeeping of the Rembrandt, the bookkeeping of the Leonardo. They don't have the bookkeeping to the Raphael. Now, some people believe that Hans Frank was fleeing the Allies in 1945, and Hans Frank took it. Now, Hans Frank was the governor of the general government there and resident in Krakow. So he's, you know, in the whole thing. So they believe that he took them, gave out two, kept one for himself, and then he skipped out, took off with it.
Yeah, makes sense.
There's really no way. But as far as I'm aware of, when the Allies finally got to Frank, they caught him in 45, I believe May of 45. They found the Leonardo's painting. They found the Rembrandt painting in his villa. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But they never found, and it was there in Poland, but they never, so they never got shipped, but they never found the Raphael. So they still have no idea where it's at. Another thing that goes missing too was the SS Minden. The SS Minden was on its way from Rio. It left Rio de Janeiro, was going to Germany in 1939. And of course, bumped in off the coast of Iceland into a British ship. And the British ship was going to take it. And the story goes that the Nazis blew up their own ship so the British couldn't take it, couldn't find what was on it. So it's always been speculated that maybe it was gold, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. I can tell you this. Late 2017, early to mid 2018, a company out of the UK had gone in there and were trying to find this ship. And, you know, the stories, like I said, all the paperwork says, oh, there was gold on it. So they used the Marine and Freshwater Research Institute, and they went out and did the mapping trying to find it. But so far, nobody's found any of the treasure there.
I remember a couple of years ago, we did a story on the Nazi train.
Yep.
You know, like
where they found it in the mountain or wherever, they thought it was buried in a hill and they were going to LIDAR it. And then they were talking about opening it up, and we never heard any more about it.
Yeah. Well, I think they did finally open up one of them in Poland, and it turned out there was nothing in it. So, but the legend of it existing is still out there.
Yeah.
And they said that there's so many hiding spaces that it very well could still be out there somewhere.
Well, and they talked about the fact that when the Allies were invading all through that area, when they were pushing them back, that you're right, is that they would have been frantic to try to hide it and then think that they could come back and get it. My question has always been, how many of those people involved in it? Let's say you and I were in the military. Let's say you and I were Nazis and we escaped it, but we had hidden gold or hidden something somewhere after the war. And after you'd survived and you'd got, you know, and all that, and you went back to your normal life, wouldn't you try to make your way back there in the next couple of years and dig it up somewhere and take it?
Well, yeah, but you remember, you're going back into a place that despised Nazis. And when you came back, they'd be like, hey, he's back. Let's kill it.
Yeah. If they recognize you, a lot of those people were probably dead.
Well, that's true.
And depends on where you hit it, the whole thing. Like, you know, it's not one of those deals that you're going to burn into your memory if you just pass through. You were just looting and pass through as a private, whatever, things along those lines. Another thing that I always find funny is that if you're going to steal gold and you're going to load it up on your Nazi ship and you have all intent with taking that way with millions of gold bars, whatever you have, with all the money that you're going to have, and let's say you're going to start your new life in Argentina or Rio de Janeiro or anything, right? That's where you're going to go.
Yeah.
So you can start it off right. let's say you made it there with a little bit of gold, but that your ship does sink coming back. Wouldn't that be the best story ever? Because everybody's going to be looking for your gold and looking for the sunk ship and not looking for you. Or let's just say this. You could easily say, oh, yeah, I had a bunch of gold on that ship or whatever it was, and then it sank. And you would rather people be worried about the lost gold that didn't exist than you. So it's an easy story to lay out to try to throw people off of your trail of where you went.
Yeah, I mean, there's
like we said, it's the Wild West over there at this time.
We were speaking with Gerard Williams. Grey Wolf was the title of his book. This was probably 7 years ago. And he was talking about the looting and the plunder of the Nazis. When they like came through, they would steal everything of value, like everything, all your artwork. They'd steal all your silverware. They'd steal all of your wedding rings, earrings, any jewelry. They'd even steal gold fillings out of your head. And they just did that. And
well, they didn't know exactly what it was, but they would bring it back to, they had art collectors and appraisers that worked for them. So they would loot everything, bring it back to a certain area. It would be appraised and divided up, and then it would be sent back to the motherland.
Yeah. And then there's even rumors of Hitler surviving the war, moving to Argentina, that a lot of those artworks were shipped to Argentina and are now in private villas and stuff to this day, private collections there in South America. I would like to go to some of those towns in Argentina that Gerard was talking about just
those
to
Bavarian
see.
Bavarian looking towns.
I think it would be really cool. Yeah, Bavarian looking neighborhoods, kind of like if you go to West or Fredericksburg. Yep. Everybody there is speaking German.
Yeah.
Everybody there is, they still have celebrations for like Hitler's birthday. And it would just be odd to see that, I would think.
Well, it wouldn't be odd if you knew what they knew and the fact that Hitler didn't die till 1962.
But don't you think that's, I mean, there's no other, it's not like there's another spot on the earth where you can go today and it's like being back in Rome.
Or going to go somewhere and look at what Omar Gaddafi created.
But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It really is like it's the only place where you could go there and it's still like it was.
Before we go any further,
1945.
There is stories of British Nazis, that the Nazis actually implemented British soldiers and that they were running undercover things and the whole deal, that the Nazi party was still alive and well after the World War II.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. What do they call it? The Fourth Reich, rise of the Fourth Reich. This was always those crazy stories that they have bases on the moon and
in Antarctica.
Yeah. It's still alive and well.
Yeah.
And whenever I watch, like, just recently, I was watching on the History Channel, of course, because it was Veterans Day, they were showing, like, World War II in color. And I know the story. I'm still drawn in. I still watch it. Every time one of those, like, shows
Every time.
I can't stop myself from watching it. You watch the series on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Anyways, they were showing pictures of Hitler doing some whatever. Not a speech, but doing stuff with his higher-ups and stuff. And then you really start thinking about it, and when it comes to your life and, like, time, and I'm like, that, when the video they were showing literally was like 33 years before I was born.
Yeah.
And when you think about it now, when I think of how long ago 33 years was, it's like, well, that's a blink of an eye. That's not that long.
Exactly.
But when you watch it on TV and it's black and white, it seems like it was so long ago when it really wasn't. Like, even now, the end of the war was 1945. That's 75 years ago. That's not that long. I've almost been out of high school 31 years. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Whenever I watch it, I just shake my head to myself like, I can't believe that was like right before I was born.
Yeah. It is crazy.
It is. And when you see the horrors and the travesty that the Nazis did, it's like hard to fathom that people could even do that. And how do you get other people talked into doing it for you?
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
The dehumanization of people to where you can treat them like objects.
Yeah. Like, how do you? Like,
and how do you talk a whole country into it?
That's why I don't get it. Like, you just say you're a guard and you're just a regular dude. And they're like, all right, you're going to help me unload these trains. And then we're going to just destroy all these people. Not once. There never was a guard that was like, no, I'm not.
Yeah, there was. And he was killed too.
I'm not doing that. Are you crazy?
Yeah. You kill a few of y'all and you're like, yeah, I better go ahead and do as I'm told. Cause I don't want to be thrown in there too.
I guess.
Fear can rule a lot of things.
Great motivator.
It's a wonderful motivator.
I mean, there were stories of like Timogen.
Yep.
Genghis Khan, you know, where people were like, they knew they were going to be slaughtered. They didn't even fight back. They just kind of like, yeah, this is it.
Can't beat them.
Slay me.
Can't beat them.
You're like, what?
Yeah, the man that was born with a holding a blood clot the size of a knuckle bone.
Yeah, they killed his brother. Him and his brother killed one of his brothers because, like, he wouldn't share fish or something.
He beat him up.
Yeah. Shot him with bow and arrow. That's crazy. Yeah. Anyways, back to your Nazi plunder. Yeah, okay,
so here we go. So on June 22nd, y'all, of 1941, Hitler fired up a little old thing called Operation Barbarossa.
Mm.
And that sent 3 million German soldiers in to the Soviet Union.
The Wehrmacht.
That's right. Now, of course, like we just discussed, everything goes crazy. They go wild taking just art, any kind of jewelry, like Kyle talked about, any kind of silverware. You got to think about rugs. Rugs was a big thing, too, because back then, I mean, it was just the way it was.
And if you're a big MMA fan, you know that Russians are a different type of person.
That is no joke, right? Yeah, you're not going to do this to to Khabib's people. That's going to be a little different.
Dagestani?
Yeah, the Dagestani is a different person.
Well, that's what changed the war.
Yes.
Was when Germany tried to take over Russia, then they're like, yeah. Well,
they had an agreement with Stalin.
Yeah.
And he crawfished on it, and Stalin's like, I don't think so, Tiny. And then they went to putting Stalingrad, they went to putting the smashing on them.
Well, and also people don't think about that the Russians actually lost the most people in World War II.
The most. Millions.
Never really think about it that way, but they did.
They're at Stalingrad.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Fighting street to street and room to room. Men, women, and children. It is an insane story.
What was that movie about the
Enemy
sniper?
At the Gates.
That's it, yeah.
That's the one. Ed Harris.
Yeah, I remember the
and
part.
What is, I forgot the dude that actually plays Vasily.
Jude Law.
Jude Law plays Vasily Zaitsev.
Remember when they get off the boat and they're starting to retreat and they're like, if you retreat, we're going to shoot you. So they basically just had to keep charging.
And they gave one a rifle loaded and the other one a magazine with like 6 shots. And he said, when he dies, you pick up that gun and use your bullets. You're like, holy shit, what
can
did you say?
Can you imagine
no,
living
I cannot.
Through that?
No. I tell y'all all the time, dude, I am not strong enough to go to war like that, man.
Man.
I like to believe I'm a tough guy, but I ain't never been shot at. I can't even imagine what that would be like.
That's a good movie. I'm going to have to watch that, too.
Great
so
stuff.
What was
great
the other
stuff.
One that we talked about at the beginning of the show? It was another Island of Dr. Moreau.
That's right.
And now Enemy of the Gates. All right, I'm writing a list here.
You got to get that down. You got to get him a piece of paper.
Because there's no new movies out.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's this oddest time. We were just talking about that the other day.
Yes.
I'm a guy that kind of goes to the movies pretty often, especially with Luke. There's literally nothing coming out.
I get to get Kyle a piece of paper so he can write down his movies. That's how old we are. He's got his phone over here, but I'm giving him a piece of paper.
Yeah, and I'm writing it with a feather.
Hold on, I got a Crayola around here somewhere. Here, there you go.
An inkwell and a feather.
And a quill.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so
The looting and all this started.
And the looting started of the Amber Room. Now, for me to tell you about the Amber Room, we're going to have to go back in time to 1701. 1701 was when the Amber Room was officially under construction. And it was originally installed at the Charlottenburg Palace. And that palace, of course, was where Frederick the First lived. And for those that don't know, Frederick the First was the king of Prussia.
Mm.
And so Frederick has this thing going on, right? And so it was built by a German sculptor named Andreas Schuttler. And it was constructed too. Now this was, he designed this whole thing. The German did. And then of course they go get a Dane, and the Danish amber craftsman, Gottfried Wolfram, is the one that constructed all the amber in it.
Okay. Cool name.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, okay. You got to imagine this. They go in there to it, and in 1716, the king of Prussia, which was Frederick William I, gave it to Peter the Great. After Peter the Great had seen it, says, look, this is the gift. This is what we're doing. We want to work together. The Prussian-Russian alliance against who? The Swedes. So that's what it's for, is they bring it out and they give them a gift. So the Amber Room is crated up into 18 boxes, big-ass boxes, and shipped over to Russia. And there in St. Petersburg, as part of a European art collection, they set it up in the Winter House. Well, in 1755, Tsarina Elizabeth, she wants it moved to the Catherine Palace in Pushkin. Pushkin's like, I think, 12 miles south of, is it Stalingrad? It's right in there somewhere. So anyway, she's like, hey, look, we're going to bring it to a different place, to a whole thing called Tsar's Village, which was kind of like their, I guess it's more like a holiday home for them.
I got you.
So that's where she wants it. So she contacts an Italian designer, And all I'm going to tell you is his name is Bartolomello. I'm not going to. Francesco Rastorelli is what it looks like. And why I have to say it like that, yeah. I don't know. So any Italians, I apologize, but that's the way I'm always going to say it. And he redesigned this whole thing to fit into this new Tsar village after it had been. So he kind of opens it up a little bit, redesigns the whole thing. And of course, like I said, it's shipped over from Berlin. Now, here's something that's really interesting. A lot of this stuff was built, like I said, it's built out of amber, but they started covering it with gold leaf. So there, and you can only imagine back in the 1700s, gold leaf. So they're gold leafing.
So they moved it. It was originally in Prussia.
Yes.
And it was shipped to Russia.
It was given to Russia. Yes. It was built and started getting put together in Berlin, in Germany. Ordered by the Prussians as a gift for the Russians.
I got you. I'm trying to visualize this in my mind. Artwork, gold leaf, everything gold.
When you pull up the picture, of course it's gaudy for us now. We look at it and like, no, but it fits its time. When you see it, it'll blow you away because you have to realize at the time that it was built, if you took today's money, they estimate it to have been worth $142 million.
Holy cow.
And I know people are getting confused talking about the amber room. How do you ship a room? Well, you have to imagine it's panels. So it goes in. There you go. Are you looking at that thing?
Okay. But I think this is a reproduction.
I'll get into that.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to jump ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
But it's a 100% a reproduction, but that's what it looks like.
Crazy.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yes. So, Tsar Elizabeth, apparently she used to like to meditate in it. She would go in there and sit around and meditate and the whole thing. Catherine the Great used it for like a gathering room, like where they would go and take drinks. And it's basically a place to show off to all your friends. That's what this room is. And when I say room, folks, it's not in a house. It is walls that lean up and pin together and panels, but you can't tell where it's connected. And so it's made to like line the inside of a room. So the room looks unbelievable, but you can take it all down, pack it all up. Or it takes 18 crates, and then you ship it back off. Apparently, Alexander II loved it too and would hang trophies in it, and I'm assuming heads, whatever else it was. Now, the thing that's really different is you have to keep in mind, we keep going to the amber room, is that, yes, it was lined with amber. In the 18th century, amber was very, very popular, but it was also very rare.
I wonder why.
Well, it was the fact of getting it. The aristocrats of the time, many of them valued it more than gold because it was a status symbol.
Just simply because it was so rare, that's why people desired it.
Amber, of course, is fossilized resin or tree sap. That's all it was, some ancient trees. This amber came from a mine in the Baltic Sea region that they used to do this. This mine has evidence of prehistoric mining in it. So this amber has been mined for thousands of years out of this area. Why? Only in that area? Who knows, right? Who has any idea why? But to let you know how much amber it is, for those of you that don't know, when I keep saying amber, you're like, well, what is amber? If you remember Jurassic Park, where it shows the mosquito stuck in that little golden nugget, that's amber. How you use it, I don't know. You're looking at the pictures. I would have no idea how would you use pieces of amber.
It looks like people take it and like it's raw and then they carve it. So you carve ornate things out of amber. And now you're imagining a master sculptor, a master craftsman sculpting elaborate candle holders or whatever.
Oh, you're getting there. Yeah.
And that's what that along with gold is what's lined the wall. And because it's super rare, it's super valuable. These people who have, if you have an amber room at your house, you're like basically show all your friends.
You're balling.
Right. You're a baller. You're
how much amber do you think is in that?
Oh geez. Like weight wise.
Yeah,
man. I have no idea what amber weighs. I would guess.
Because you got to imagine it's on walls.
Yeah. 5,000 pounds.
6 tons.
Oh, okay.
6 tons. So
18 or 12,000, I'm sorry.
Pounds. Of Baltic amber was in that room. Imagine shipping and moving that thing.
Yeah, that's just the amber. Not alone. Now you got to miss all the gold. Else.
Exactly. The room was 592 square feet. And it used 565 candles to illuminate that room.
Oh, so 500 square feet. That's not that big. No. If you're thinking of comparable size, a normal like 2-car garage is around 400. So 20 by 20 is 400 square feet.
There you go.
So not much bigger than that. But in the pictures, it looks like it's way bigger.
It's tall.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The way they're taking those photos makes, and of course, this is a replica. This isn't, and I say the replica, this isn't 100% of what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Because mm-hmm.
it was redone, and I'll get it. It was redone in 1977. They started a replica of it, and they've built more.
Where's
on
the
it.
Replica at?
I believe it's still in Russia itself, too.
Oh, okay.
So those candles, 565 candles, gave off so much heat that the panels, when put together, were bound with wax. So it would look seamless. And the wax would melt, the binding would melt because of all those candles. And they had to hire a full-time caretaker to look after it. Because it used to just be set up and you would just leave it in the room.
I got you.
That was it. So as of course, as all of the forces moved into Pushkin and all of the curators and this whole thing, they start trying to disassemble. They're in the Catherine Palace and hide the amber room. Well, of course, dry amber does what? It starts falling apart. So instead, they tried to hide the room behind wallpaper, but it didn't fool them. So they wallpapered over that, trying to hang it, building frames, because you couldn't move it around. So what happens? The German soldiers show up. This time, it takes 27 crates and a group of German soldiers 36 hours to tear this thing down and hide it. They pack it up, and they ship it to present-day Kaliningrad. It was Kongsberg, Germany, back in the day. When it gets to the castle in Kongsberg, the museum there on the coast of the Baltic coast, they rebuild it, put it all back together. And
so now they've taken over the town in Russia where it was housed.
Yep.
They've shipped it back to Germany.
Tore it down, looted it.
Reassembled it in Germany?
Reassembled it there.
Okay.
And it stays there. And the museum's director is Alfred Rode. And he is a junkie for amber. And all he has basically based his entire career around that's his passion. So he, you know, he's a museum curator, the director, the whole thing, but he is the man to talk to about amber. So he is, of course, freaking out now that he's got it, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has it for 2 years and he has the entire thing rebuilt. It's on display and he studies panel after panel after panel of all of this. So he gets to spend 2 years with it going crazy. Well, later in the year of 1943, of course, the war people are already seeing, Rode is told, hey, man, y'all are going to have to tear this thing down. We've got to hide it away. So start breaking it down. So again, they start tearing it down. Well, story goes that he had it tore apart, put in crates, and stored there. And a year later, in August of 44, Allied bombing turns that whole castle and the castle museum area and all that stuff into dust, pounds it into the ground.
But they've already removed it.
Well, they didn't believe so. Rode had come out, talked about it. Everybody's led to believe that that's it, that the museum is trashed and that it was crated up, tore to pieces. One of the stories goes that the party leader of the Nazi party, which was the East Prussian or whatever it was named Erich Gottler, that he packs up those crates that are already there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he hides them in some trucks and that they take off with it and really try to drag it off to safety. Well, it wasn't until 1965 that they capture old Gottler. And he starts being questioned by the Polish authorities. And he reveals that the amber room was crated into a sealed bunker on the outskirts of the city of Koensburg. That he's like, dude, we had a bunker out there. We hid it in that bunker. But because everything was bombed, he doesn't know where the bunker's at because it turned everything into rubble.
Right.
By the time they claimed, it was like, I have no way of knowing any kind of marker to tell me where to go. Like, you know, I can't find the bunker. It's an underground bunker. We went to it. I don't have any. Now, that may be a slick way of him telling everybody
sure.
that. But he says that whole thing, which the people really investigating this find it a little strange. Because it contradicts the story of what Rode had said. When Rode said that, hey, look, it was in the castle all the way back to April of 45 before it got pounded to pieces, whatever it was. Like, dude, that's where it was at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then Gottler's saying, no, player, that's not where it was at. So you've got two stories. There's a whole nother theory that I wasn't unaware of this. The MS Wilhelm Gustloff. Is a Nazi cruise ship, and it is believed that the Nazi cruise ship was loaded up with the Amber Room and had set sail. And it wasn't long after it had set sail that a Russian submarine sank that ship.
I think I've heard this story before.
Well, 9,500 people died during the sinking of that, the MS Wilhelm.
Mm-hmm.
It was the greatest loss of life in maritime history.
Wow.
And I'm like, that, I never even knew 9,500 people drowned and or was blown up, whatever, that day. So a story goes that it was on there. But there have been multiple dives to the wreckage of that ship. They've not found anything. Now, there's another theory that Stalin actually had a second amber room built. And it was kind of rough, but it was built enough that when he left it out there for the Germans to steal the fake one, and then they hit it.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. So the pictures that you're looking at may really be the real one. And they may have just said that they decided to rebuild it in 77 and repost it, put it back out there. And they're like, and that may actually be the real one. I don't know. But over the years, there's been a ton of searches, right? The Soviet Union has done a pile of them. In 1997, they was alerted that there was a piece of the room was found, and an Italian stone mosaic known to have been a part of the room turned up in Western Germany. The story goes that it's owned by the family of a soldier that helped pack up the Amber Room there in Kongsberg in January 45, and that they took some of it and that he took a little piece with it. And that lets people know there. They're like, well, now we know that this man touched it. He took a part of it. We know it was there in January of 45. Now, in 1988, there's been tales of two different groups of researchers that say they have found part of the Amber Room, or actually have found the Amber Room. One was a German silver mine and the other one was in a lake in Lithuania. But after they did some more research in it and followed these stories up, they never could come up with any of it there either. There was also another one in 08 that said, oh, we found it. Maybe we discovered it. Nothing. Now, there have been radar scans that have said that they have detected large amounts of metal believed to be too dense for copper in an abandoned copper mine in Deutschendorf, Saxony, is where they believe this place was hiding at. Now, there's observers there that believe that this mine was the true area that they hid the Amber Room in. Other investigators believe that they had found it in Göttingen in a salt mine in that was, now get a load of this. And we know that they would hide stuff in salt mines often, that it's 2000 foot down in a salt mine in a room down there. But the problem is that since all this has gone on, that salt mine's flooded. So they can't, how are you going to detect 2000 foot underground in an underwater salt mine? If it's there, that thing's lost to history. It's gone for good.
Can you imagine scuba diving inside of a salt mine?
No. Now, apparently there is a theory that there was a coded message sent to Berlin in January 45 that read Amber Room operation completed, object stored in B SCH WV. They believe that at that point it was referred to the B shaft of the mine in Göttingen in, and it's some German word. Okay, folks, that's what I'm going to tell you. Wittigkeit, Wallerprehausen. So, yeah, maybe I have no idea. There's another theory that says that there is a room in and full of Nazi treasure at the bottom of a 350-foot lake called Toplitz in the Austrian Alps.
Alps?
Yeah.
Alps?
Yeah, the place. And that the senior German officers are known to have retreated there as the Allies. So I'm assuming that they had built underground bunkers under all this, and then that's where. But it's like you said, there's so many places to hide it. Where would you? And if you could close it up into crates, we don't really know how big these crates are. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're speculating, oh, they're mad. But they may not be more than like steamer trunks. It may have really come apart in pieces like that. And like I said, too, others say that it was put into boxes, into crates, loaded up onto a horse-drawn carriage and thrown into a lake. And hit them there, just sank them. There's another crazy thing that you're going to like, that there is reports of the Amber Room curse, that people who were connected to it, like Rode. Rode and his wife died of typhus while the KGB had them, while they were trying to find out more about the room. Now, you could say, hey, look, that's really not a curse. It could just be the way it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a Russian intelligence officer named Gusev, who died in a car wreck after he gave his first and only interview to a journalist about the Amber Room. And there's another one. There's a German soldier named George Stein. All right. And he was the Amber Room hunter, is what he liked to be known as. So he's constantly digging and trying to find this. He was murdered under strange circumstances in a Bavarian forest in 1987. So again, is this more of the Nazis? Is there more underlying Nazi stuff still going on of this whole thing? They've never found it, okay? This whole time, never found anything that has to do.
Not one panel.
Not one panel, not one anything. And it's funny because I was reading about this. What got it all going, folks, is what normally does is I'm looking at crazy hidden treasures. I love the idea of hidden treasures. And while I'm looking at this, I've got something I want to read to you from thefirstnews.com, folks. Annie Chapman wrote this October 1st of 2020, and the headline reads, World War II shipwreck off a Polish coast could contain legendary amber room, says divers. Literally a little over a month ago. I cannot believe this happened. Polish divers have found a wreck off of a World War II German steamer that they say might contain the lost amber room. And then, of course, it goes into, but this steamer was named Karula, and it sank in the spring of 1945 on its way from what is now the region of Kaliningrad to Russia, or in Russia, to Germany. It says now the ship has been located off the Polish coast a few dozen kilometers north of the seaside resort town of Ustka. It was found 88 meters underwater after a search around a year by the Balatek team of divers from the Gdansk area that studies shipwrecks in the Baltic Sea. The team has access to reports by the Soviet pilots who sank the ship in 1945, but even these mentioned five different positions. Practically untouched for decades, the wreck contains items ranging from military vehicles to porcelain, as well as many mysterious boxes with unknown contents, which are already capturing people's imagination. And she goes on to write about the thing that people believe that it might be the Amber Room, and that this might be a ship that it was actually put on, and that these other stories put out of. And of course, it is wishful thinking. That this is probably going to be another dead end, but...
Oh, so they haven't excavated it yet?
No, it says here, according... Now, this was October 1st of this year, okay. So I mean, it's been 45 days.
Maybe they're waiting for next summer.
Well, it says, according to Polish diver Tomasz Stachura, who led the search for the wreck, says that it could provide, here's a quote, provide groundbreaking information on the disappearance of the legendary Amber Room. It was in Kongsberg that the Amber Room was seen for the last time. From there, the steamer... And it's from this exact town that the steamer Karulsh set out on its final voyage with a major load, is what he added, and that they are continuing to examine the wreck and the cargo. Now, he says, it goes on here, that Thomas, as a member of the Balatek team, said that finding the German steamer and the crate with contents that are unknown at the moment resting on the bottom of the Baltic Sea could be significant for a whole of history.
Man, we got to keep an eye on that.
So, exactly. I am super pumped. But I'm like, dude, what's the odds of me checking into this Amber Room? And then I found out a month ago, they found some more information about it. So, folks, I hope you enjoyed it. It's more crazy Nazi stories and missing stuff. It's extremely fun. I love the idea of crazy missing gold and missing treasure. So let's take a quick break. When we come up back, me and Kyle will wrap this little jewel up and discuss a few more wild things. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Here we go again. Little wrap up. I hope y'all enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite subjects. It really is. I say that
treasure,
about a lot
treasure
of stuff.
In general.
Yeah.
Lost treasure to me is like, it's something to think about. I guess as a young boy, like you said, watching Indiana Jones or reading books and just thinking of the lost city of El Dorado and so many things. You think about treasure and it makes it very interesting. You were also talking about what's the chances of you looking into this mystery of the Amber Room and then just a month ago, a ship they found at the bottom of the sea might actually hold contents.
It makes no sense, does it?
That's an awful synchronicity. But it's speaking of synchronicity, you had a recent synchronicity. Tell the listeners out there what recently happened.
This is
involving
weird.
My uncle, involving my cousin, involving a guy I used to work for, and stories that you've shared on this show numerous times.
Okay. I'll post up the pictures and whatnot. So y'all can check it out. I'll put it on Instagram. I'll put it on Facebook so y'all can see it. So the story goes, you remember me, everybody here. If you haven't, you've probably have forgotten, or if you've just found the show and you want to hear, here's a quick story. I used to hunt in a place called Old Glory. You remember everyone talking about, I had a guy that I hunted on there with, claimed he'd seen a Bigfoot. I spoke to him and he quit hunting that day. Y'all remember me talking about the fact he quit hunting. He sold all of his stuff. He ended up passing away 7 or 8 years later. Named Warren. Anyway, he had this kind of encounter. And what Kyle's referring to is, I get a call out of the blue the other day. It's in Haslett County in the state of Texas.
Haslett.
Haskell's a town.
Oh.
Haslett County. So if you look up in there, y'all, it's wild, but it's real rough country. Y'all can look around. You'll see all of that stuff out there and what I'm talking about. His uncle messages me, calls me, and is saying, he goes, man, I got a story for you I just found. And Kyle's cousin, they were looking at land. They were wanting to either lease land or buy land, so wanting to have some more places to hunt. And so his uncle was just on a realtor site looking at ranches and land for sale out there, came across one of them, and in an array of pictures like they do, and of course, you know, they're taking pictures of all the land. There's no houses on it. It's just country, you know, and all this. So there's 15, 20, 30 pictures of riverfront and fences and, you know, what it all looks like. And in one of those pictures is a man dressed in a monkey suit, in a gorilla suit, looking up at a deer stand. And the person taking the picture is in the deer stand. So it looks like it's looking down on a guy in a gorilla suit in the middle of the country, in the middle of nothing. Just, I mean, salt. You know, salt cedar and scrub and mesquite, and that's it. That's what it's out there in. And his uncle was like, the reason he called me was to tell me about the story. He's like, dude, this is the exact same county of where you're the guy that you worked with, or that, you know, that you hunted with, his sighting was at. Now, mind you, this is over 20 years ago, this sighting that he had. And now, what are the odds, or the synchronicity is what Kyle and I've been talking about, this, that his uncle would be looking for land randomly 20 plus years later in that county, find a ranch, look through the ranch and find a picture of a guy randomly in the middle of all these photos. There's no one, there's not before it. There's no reason for it, but a staged looking cheesy Bigfoot photo, unless there is a backstory, unless there's some sort of backstory in that county that either the sighting that the person I knew, Warren, my buddy, had, either spurred all this, or his is one of many, and they've just done a really good job of keeping it quiet. And this is like a tongue in cheek kind of make a little gag, like a troll of their way of saying, you know, everybody here knows about this. I'm just going to throw this in there randomly.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm in real estate. Why would you include a picture of a guy dressed as Sasquatch?
There's no reason
in a land sale that you're trying to you're posting legitimately on a website to sell.
Yeah.
And what are the chances of it happening in the exact county that you hunted in where a guy saw something 20 something years ago? And unless, like you're saying, like his sighting, that story of him got out, like maybe another guy that was on the lease stopped at a gas station or convenience store near there and told what happened. And then that woman that the guy told the story went home, like, man, you never believe this. This hunter came in today and he said that his friend saw the Sasquatch, packed up his stuff and left. And then fast forward, there's at a family reunion. Hey, Becky, tell her the story of the guy, the hunter that came in. Yeah, he saw us. And the story spread organically like that.
That's almost more unbelievable than there being Bigfoot out there.
Or, right.
I mean, seriously, like a story growing to that size is almost more unbelievable than ever being a Bigfoot.
Right. Or it's kind of well known that numerous people have been having sightings out there all along. And so that's why the person did that picture. I don't know, but it is a synchronicity, right?
It's very strange. And like we had said before, the odds of your uncle finding, your uncle that knows the story, that's into Bigfoot, that knows these things, and how he just randomly found it.
Man, that's...
We're living in a simulation.
It is bizarre. Speaking of bizarre, don't forget about our hotline, folks. If you got a cool story you'd like to share with me and Cam, as well as the other listeners,
you can call us on your cell phone.
Yeah, you can call it 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. And recently on the last show, we were playing several sightings that happened up in Nova Scotia. Well, I don't know what it is about the northeast part of the United States and southeast part of Canada, but there's been a lot of sightings. We got another one.
Yes.
Not from Nova Scotia, but from a young lady in Maine. Her name is Janelle. Let's check this out.
Hi, guys. guys. My name is Janelle, and I live in currently in Biddeford, Maine. But when this happened to me, I was it was where I grew up, which is in central Maine in a little place called North Anson. And I'll just start it by, I was probably about 16 years old at the time, and I lived in a fairly rural spot. Night times are nice and dark. You don't have a lot of sky shine. So, you know, quite often a friend of mine who lived just across the street, we got together in the evenings, especially Friday nights. My mom and dad oftentimes were away during the evening on a Friday evening because my mom worked late. So oftentimes we would hang out just to kind of, you know, keep each other company or what have you. And I remember this particular night, it was probably, it was in the springtime because it wasn't really hot. It was still a little cool at night. But my parents had gotten home and I was just walking across the street with her as she was going to go home and for the evening. And it was probably about, I would say, 9 o'clock at night, so fairly dark. Like I said, and we were standing talking, and all of a sudden we noticed this bright white light that came up over the trees behind our house. And we kind of watched it, and, you know, being from Maine, you know, you see definitely a lot of planes. And, you know, sometimes they do night maneuvers with the Forest Service and things like that. So you may see helicopters and things like that. And at first they kind of thought that this just really yellow, bright, singular light must be a helicopter. And we kind of watched it, and it was kind of coming up over the trees, and it was coming our way. And it was getting, you know, fairly close, and it was fairly good size. And we're watching it. We're kind of standing there talking. Again, we're 16 and 17 years old, like not really thinking probably a whole lot of anything. And it just continued to come up over, and then it kind of shifted, and it kind of followed more of the tree line, you know, more than close to our house. It was a little ways off, but we're watching it, and it never makes noise. We never hear any noise. And then I noticed that it started to kind of, it went up in elevation a little bit. And again, it's just seeing a white light, a yellowish white light, singular. It went, and by this point, we're kind of really watching it because we're like, what is this? There were no other lights of any kind. There was no anything that indicated what it was, plane-wise or otherwise. Again, we live in the country, it's quiet, there was no noise, so it wasn't even like, you know, oftentimes when a plane or something goes over by, you know, you hear the sound after the fact. There was literally no sound of plane activity at all, or helicopters obviously would be very noticeable. And we watched this thing continue to fly away from us, and it started to kind of go upwards. So it started to go, you know, again, it's like going up in elevation or whatever. And my friend was standing, she was kind of like back to and side to it. And I was face on watching it. And I'm literally watching it thinking to myself, what the hell is this thing? When all of a sudden it just, with a flash of light that did light up the area surrounding where it took off, like where it went. So there was a little flash of light that briefly, like enough to light up the sky around it, and it was gone. She and I just kind of looked at each other, and I was like, well, on that note, I am going in for the evening. Thank you. Never saw anything quite like that again. The funny part is that, you know, later on I had found out that they're in a town just a few, you know, miles away, back when I was much younger, but there's been history of many UFO sightings of weird lights, and my dad had actually been a sheriff for the Somerset County Sheriff's Department, and he had actually had called. They had called one night back in, I think it was like 1983. This was probably like 1994, I would say. But like 1983 or so, they had calls of UFO activity in the area between two or three different towns in the area. In fact, if you can look it up, and there's you know, some pretty reputable people give their accounts of what they saw. So it's pretty interesting. And then, like I said, seeing that night where it just took off in a flash and was gone, it was something quite spectacular, and it's always stood with me. I will never forget it. Again, don't know what it was, but it was definitely something that was unidentified, and it was flying, and it was an object. So from that, I don't know what it was, but I want to thank you guys. I love your podcast. I can't ever get enough of it. You guys are great. You have supported my friend Joe Weeks and his little girl Zoe, which again, I loved you anyway, but I loved you even more for that. So I hope you boys in Texas are doing well. Stay safe. We're doing well up here. We're just praying we don't all go back down into lockdown. And I, you know, hope you all have a good evening, and I'll be watching and listening. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Janelle, for sending that in.
That's awesome.
Strange. I didn't know. I'm familiar with them. We've talked about the Brown Mountain lights, the Marfa lights. I didn't know that there was lights up there like that in Maine, or maybe it was a UFO.
Yeah.
Who knows? Strange sighting. Again, like if you have any strange sightings you'd like to share with us, call that hotline, 888-393-2783. If you'd rather email us the story, you can email us expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Cam, what do you got planned for your weekend?
I'm going to hunt. Sounds excellent. It's going to be good. In fact, you're going to hunt. And the reason I know that is because I'm going to be at your house at about 5 a.m., so I'm going to be banging on the door. So you either have your ass outside ready to go, or I'm going to wake up your whole family.
Yeah, our baseball season's over, so I am kind of relieved at that. It's nice to have off. We got Thanksgiving coming. We got Christmas coming. It is a wild time of year.
Hey, you want to go roller skate for my birthday?
Roller skate?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of ways that we can go real easy but might still have a chance of maybe going to the hospital.
I don't know if I can. I don't know if I know how to roller skate.
No inlines. Dude, you're going quads. How long has it been since you've been on a pair?
Let's see.
You're going now.
38 years.
You're going.
Remember
we're
back
doing
in the
it.
Day, I mean, like Weatherford, we didn't have a bowling alley or anything. Like literally the skating rink was like the only thing.
Yeah. Or, and then when they finally locked that all down, we used to have to go to the traffic circle before they turned it into an ice rink.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to. Yeah. Yeah. We'll do it.
Roller skating. I remember the guy, the lawnmower man, the guy that would do the fancy dancing.
I've seen him do a backflip.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen him do it. Dude, you were there. When he used to do it at the skating rink, when he used to wear the knee highs, remember? And they'd be playing the 70s music, and he'd get real low and one-foot it.
I remember the amazing moves. I don't remember the backflip.
I remember him throwing a backflip. I remember him doing the moonwalk. I remember him doing all kinds of wild stuff. Man, I see him around town still.
Man, I don't know what kind of vehicle that is he's driving, but that thing, it's got to have a record, right, for miles?
Dude, it's old and it's scary, and I love that thing.
It looks like...
I want to buy it and completely turn it into like you know what I mean? Go through it, completely redo it, and have it redone to where it looks kind of like the mystery machine, but it's for the podcast.
It looks like the Creepers truck off Jeepers Creepers. That's what it looks
like. But bigger.
And he pulls a trailer with it and has all kinds of lawnmowers and stuff. He's a landscaper.
I don't know his real name.
We don't know his name, but we call him Job from the movie The Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, that's it. He's Job. He's a great dude. He's a little odd, but every time I've ever talked to him, he's been a real nice guy.
Yeah, moonwalking with skates. You're like, well, yeah, it's got wheels on it. That's not hard. That's what makes the moonwalk cool.
Yeah, I can't do it, though. Can you?
No, exactly. What are the wheels now? The sneakers with wheels in them.
Heelys, Playboy.
That's what they are.
Heelys.
I've been what he's tried those.
You know what? I want light up shoes.
Get them.
Do they make them in adult size?
I'm sure they do.
Oh, man, I really need. My daughter's been longboarding, and look, folks, she's not super athletic, okay? So she's just now she's more smart than athletic. My son's more athletic than smart. You know how it is. You got kids.
Yeah.
So, everybody, look, you can agree to that. Anyway, so she started learning longboarding. She's 20. That's right. She went down hard the other evening. I mean, off into the grass, tumbling. She was trying to ride at dark, and she was wearing a headlamp, and it went flying off. And I'm laughing because I'm not real good at those situations, because I'm like, ha, 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 is anything broke? And she's like, everything's good. Thanks for laughing, Dad. I'm like, don't worry about it. That's free.
She needs to get something really smooth, like a tennis court.
Oh, that's what she rides at the park over there by the house. She rides over there because the basketball court's real smooth.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you don't want to be on like an asphalt.
Oh, gosh, no, not yet. But here's another thing. I've been after her to get a helmet. She still hadn't, so I'm going to have to go buy her a helmet.
I mean, I'll never forget being about 12 years old, going down a big hill near my grandmother's house on asphalt. And you know, you start picking up speed and then the board starts wobbling and starts shaking, but there's
where it's walking back and forth.
Man, I remember. And then you just at some point you just have to bail. And I got hurt really bad. I remember that board. It was green. It was a Lester Kasai.
Nice.
I can't believe I just remembered that. Yeah. I remember that. I remember that accident. I mean, I was cut up pretty good.
Who was
never did that? I never did that again.
I can't remember who it was that made the board called the Jester. It had the big laughing face on the bottom of it. And then I had put random grip tape all over the top, hot pink grip tape. And it was the layered board where it was all wood. And, but it hadn't been painted. You could see the laminations and then it was raw wood on the bottom and they had the Jester face on it and all this stuff. I can't remember what it was. I want to say it was like a
Howell Peralta or something.
Yeah. Or a Steve Caballero. What is his name? Something
Caballero.
Caballero. Wasn't that, I think it was his, man. I can't remember now. That was the one I had. I think somebody ended up stealing it. But we used to ride it off the house. Remember that? We'd get on top of the house and ride it down the house. We got in trouble for that.
Yeah, I'm trying to look. I'm trying to do a search, but it's just coming up with new stuff.
Yeah, well, there's no way we're going to find that. But yeah, it's going to be.
It looked like one of those.
Let me take a look here.
No, that's not it.
It might have been that one. The Jester, the Luciero. It might have been that one.
It was one like it where it looked like wood, but it had like a, man, that might have been it now. But you got to imagine, dude, I was like 12.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I know for sure I was at Curtis. So that was sixth grade.
You were in sixth grade then, yeah.
So I remember the guy I bought it from.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You probably brought it over to the house. That's probably the one you was riding off the house.
Probably.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's about time you got to get out of here.
Yeah, we got to go. Folks, y'all have a wonderful wonderful weekend. Thanks so much for bearing with us. We're back in time. I've got my schooling done. Kyle's got his schooling done. Baseball's done. It's just hunting and good times now, folks. We are going to be having a blast. I'm going to have to do some more stories about this. There's way more of these crazy, like, treasures and all this stuff that I've got right here that I need to cover. There's like one or two more that I would really want to get into.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Sounds hopefully. Like hopefully. We'll make it that way.
All right, folks, let's get out of here. This is about all the time we have for this week's show. Till next time, stay safe, wear your mask, wash your hands. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.